Do you ever go to that?
I do. I like RPG Bot.
Okay, so you do know about RPG Bot.
I do like RPG Bot.
Okay, okay.
They got, I think they got in trouble for a little bit because they had a lot of like free resources on there that was basically just the entire book.
Yeah, they, I don't know if we're talking about, this is what we're starting with. So RPG Bot, if you, for those of you that are in the uninitiated, is a really great place when you're trying to make a character and you want to know how not yes. to suck. You'll notice they'll reference abilities and whatnot and say, this is a wonderful option for yada, yada, yada. But
yeah, they won't explain it. Like stars and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But they won't explain the ability. And that's probably what they got caught yes. on. They were probably like, here's the ability. But now they link towards it. It's a great resource. I'll be talking about it a little bit today for those of you who don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went to go. Okay. So first of all, I'm doing this thing where I'm in an addictions class. We're learning about addictions and stuff. And we have a project. We have to kind of like Lynn, you got to give something up. It's just to kind of see. It's supposed to be a thing that you're, it's like the worst thing to your wellness or something. So it's supposed to be like you're able to empathize even slightly with someone that is dealing with an addiction. And so I gave up sweets, all sweets entirely. That's tough because I love getting a milkshake. You know, I love grabbing a chocolate bar or something. But we went to Jason's Deli today, and I told my girlfriend, I said, this doesn't count, right?
It does count. You can.
If you go to Jason's Deli, you got to get the free ice cream. You can't not get the free ice cream.
Well, yeah, you know, if you think of a drug addict, it was like, I can't not get the free drugs. This dude wants to give me drugs.
And see, now I can empathize.
Now you understand.
To a very small extent.
But did you get it?
Hell yeah, I got that ice cream, okay. man.
Where's your teacher's number? Tell. I want to tell your fucking teacher. You
failed. I'll write it in my journal.
You know, will you?
I'll talk about it. I'll talk about how You're I'm a weak human. And I gave into my primal instincts. But it was, first of all, it was good ice cream. And I've lasted about a week and a half. So
that's a good amount. You know, I love sweets as well. So I feel like I can empathize with that. And that kind of mirrors the situation that's going on for me as of late. You know, I played a lot of Warlocks. You know, giving up Warlocks would be probably the thing for me.
Yeah.
If we think about it.
If you were forced to like make a bunch of D&D characters and someone said you cannot make Warlocks,
yeah.
that'd be tough.
Well, I pinpointed why I love Warlock, and I don't necessarily... Part of it is some of the classes, particularly Hexblade, but it's also letting the DM kind of fuck with you. The
lore stuff,
it's a lot of fun, which there are other ways to do that and put it into your classes, but I've been thinking about the fighter a lot lately, you know?
Yeah, the fighter's cool. The fighter is, as we've discussed in other episodes, is the most picked class, at least on D&D Beyond, I imagine, probably everywhere, particularly human fighter. But and I think it's because it's, I don't know, relatable. I mean, cause there's nothing really... I mean, there's obviously a lot of cool things about the fighter. They're very skilled at what they do. But it's not like a person selling their soul to some crazy deity. There's it's still more... If you look at history, you can see people that are like, that guy is a fighter. You don't look back in history and see, that guy is a warlock. You know, so it's maybe a little easier to connect to.
Well, I mean, warlocks are based in fantasy. Think about... Have you watched Arcane yet? I don't think you have.
No.
There's one character that's full-on just warlock. And I'm like, let's go. So... For the fighter, for me, I feel like, and hello, not a fighter, he's Ryan.
He's also not a fighter, he's Braxton.
This is not a fighter podcast, but it's the Dungeon Crawl.
I think that would be a good name of a podcast, not a fighter.
That'd
be like, I don't think it'd be a D&D related podcast, but.
It could be a section on our podcast about how to make subclasses that aren't boring as hell. Yeah, or not subclasses, like making, I don't know. We're thinking about it. Don't take it from us. I'm watching you.
You're there.
We've already copyrighted. People are working on it immediately right now. Yep. But for the fighter, it's an amalgamation of just martial fighting.
Yes, I think it's very easily confused that it's just
sword and board, like
man
whack.
Sword, yeah. Shields maybe, and fight. But it can be a ranger. It can be the guy with the bow walking around.
It does the best out of everything.
It
in
does.
D&D.
It can be. It's a lot more, I think, than on initial look through of like if you're just to see the names of all the classes, then you would I think would initially expect it to do.
Yes. So the reason I think people take it the most is it has the least opposing name.
True.
It's like, what do I want to do in D&D? Fight? Cool. Done. Monk?
Yeah.
I'm not really about that aspect.
I think the magic turns a lot of people off for their first character.
Really?
I think it's people don't want to deal with the spell. So if you are coming to D&D and you have a friend helping you out, they're probably going to say, hey, I would stick to not using a magic class at first. Just like we were told in Pathfinder, don't pick some of these classes because they're going to be a little too tough for your first playthrough.
I'm starting to feel that now. Once leveling up in Pathfinder, for me, for you Pathfinder fans, kind of scares me. Yeah. They're like, hey, you guys get to love them. Everybody's like, yeah. And I'm like, no, like, I just barely, I don't have D&D Beyond holding my hand.
What to do.
Yeah. So I'm starting to get a new perspective on that. So for me, at least having been in D&D for a bit, I get scared to go to martial classes because I'm worried I'm going to be bonking people on the head and just doing the same thing every turn, you know? So that's why I'm challenging myself for the live play that we're about to do again, the Dungeon Chronicles. So go get subscribed and follow on that, all your good little bingo bobs, whatever you want to do. But I'm challenging myself to do fighter and see if I can make it in a way that doesn't feel like I'm just swinging a polearm every turn, which is basically what I already do with my hex blade.
Pretty much.
So,
but you do, we do it flavorfully.
Yeah,
with just like try to. Tentacles and stuff.
Yeah. So a lot of the fighter, I mean, Ryan will kind of jump into a lot of the RP and like how you're going to build them and whatnot. Yeah. But it was refreshing for me to jump in again to the player's handbook and see a little of the flavoring that they put there. It felt like going back in time reading some of these early stuff. I really tell you, jumping in, it's interesting. Like, okay, what does D&D say a fighter
is? Even just the layout of stuff is very different.
It's very, very different. And granted, it's on D&D Beyond, so it's not the same as the book anymore. Oh, Ryan probably looked at the paper. Yeah, so he had a bit of a different. But going back here, you can tell they haven't re-looked and changed their verbiage on some of the really old subclasses that have been non-offensive, like the fighter. And they still have, like, you know, you're going to be an adventurer drawn to use your training to go on quests and whatnot, dungeon delving. And I'm like, well, there's so many people that probably make fighters that don't want to do that. And this is their effort saying, like, you know, you need to make a character that wants to go do these things. So here's how a fighter might feel about that.
Yeah, I think it's important when you're creating a fighter to remember that you're not just a town guards guy. You got here because you're very skilled at what you do. You're obviously not, like, not just with swords, very versatile. But you're not just a random local guardsman, not the local sheriff, dude. Maybe you started there and you just happened to be really skilled. You kept training yourself and you got better and better and better. So you're like a step above these militia.
Even at level one, which is not so fun in D&D.
So I guess hopping in, you want to start with RP or start with mechanics? What are you feeling?
What do you think somebody's going to do first when they're making a fighter? What are they going straight towards?
I don't know. I think it very much depends. I think
we're going to get into the weeds when we start talking about mechanics and stuff.
Yeah, so we'll talk about making your character. And then you can build your character around
who
the
you
other
wanna
stuff.
Be? Yeah. What are you?
So I think one of the nice things about fighter compared to, I think, cleric and the other ones that start like literally subclass level one.
Yeah.
You get a couple levels to kind of figure out what you want to make. So starting from the beginning, like we said, you already set the table. You're a skilled ass fighter. I think one of the first things you need to think about is where you got trained or how you got trained. Maybe you were the local guard guy, but you were the best in the land, and now you have better opportunities. And maybe you're I don't know, guy above you, the general guy. You're really close
general
to him.
General guy.
And
love him.
Yeah, he taught you everything you know. Maybe your dad taught you everything you know, and he was a great guy, and then something happened to him. Now you're going out there.
Super dark, grimdark backstory, and then you turn into a rogue. That's how rogues are made. They start as fighters, and you're like, wait a minute. I kind of want to be a rogue.
And also where you got trained, I think, is important to figure.
I just realized we've been thinking about that for my character, and I didn't realize I was doing that. Look how good I am at this.
Because like I said, you're not just average Joe. You've been trained somewhere. You have some sort of skilled, I mean, just like a wizard was trained maybe in an academy of sorts. You were trained in this art of martial fighting.
I think I kind of forget about that oftentimes. Like, even though you're level one, even just getting to that first, like being called a fighter, that's a title.
Yeah.
You know, you're not a guards dude, blah, blah, blah. You're a fighter. So you're going to do a bunch of shit. And don't think, I don't know, the martial training is really important. For this, it's really, really important to know what weapon you're going to use or weapons. I think that can really identify your character. So maybe even start there. Like, what kind of item do I want to hit people with and do quests and quell dragons with? It might be that sword. It might be a polearm because it's really good. Or
bows.
Forego everything. Use a bow because that's the best way to build fighter, technically.
Too. You could do that as well.
Yes.
And then start thinking about, so you've decided your weapon, and then you were taught by some sick ass polearm master guy, sure. But what drove you to there? Because sure, maybe you could have just been a regular guard guy, and that's how your day as a Skyrim guard ended. You're stuck there. You took an arrow to the knee, whatever.
Your friend took an arrow to the knee. You're like, that's not gonna be me.
But something had to push you to continue training, to keep going out there. Was it to protect your family? Was it to be strong enough to prevent tragedies around the world? Or do you just really like punching things and being a buff ass fighter that go out there and get, and you make a name for yourself? I mean, I think it says something in a fantasy world. Depends. It doesn't matter if it's high fantasy, low fantasy. It's a fantastical world to decide, you know, I'm gonna go out there and just kick shit with my fists, my sword, my bow and arrow. And there's guys with magic and dragons and necromancers. So I think that in itself should say something about your character, that you're badass enough to say, I'm just going to go out there with my own sword.
These are the goblins. The one of the, and that's literally D&D, Goblin Slayer is, however controversial the anime is and is right. not.
Yes.
Like, if you want an example of somebody who's just a tried and true fighter, because the anime is based in D&D, literally it starts with the character sheet, both in the manga and the anime. He's just running around. He's got a bunch of tools. He's the Fire Force dude, the one without any of the powers. If you watch Fire Force at all, Kenneth, guy on Dungeon Chronicles, just showed up on this podcast. Shout out. Loves him. I think he's Captain Obi, and he's trained his body as strong as he can be. He's got all these tools, and everybody, all his teammates are like flinging fire spells and stuff, and he's like, no, I want to pick up this heavy-ass fucking like jackhammer, jump on this fire demon, and just shove it down its throat and bam, kill it. That's what your fighter's doing.
Makes me think of Sokka, that, you know, everyone else around him is doing sick-ass stuff. These guys, little boomerangs, like, wow. And he even has an arc, spoilers, maybe. He doesn't have an arc where he feels outclassed. Like, he's like, I'm not doing anything, and these guys are so much better than me. And then he gets trained. He goes out there, gets trained by some sick guy, and he can use his boomerang even better now.
It's like, you too can do this.
You can do it.
Well, you know, we don't need to convince people to play fighter, because you're already doing it, apparently. So, there's that. I don't know. Did you have any sort of kind of like, what does a fighter look like when it starts growing RP wise? Like, what is your growing and gaining abilities? What's happening? Because you're not the best fighter when you start.
No.
No.
I think you could roleplay it, or that you say you're continuing training, or maybe you've heard of some crazy ability that your master talked about. Yeah. You watched him do it in battle, or there's a folklore, some legends that you look up to. Like, man, I think I'm going to give this new ability a shot that I've been thinking about. You can even name this ability. I feel like the Battlemaster guy, he'd be the one that's shouting off, like the anime character, shouting off what attacks he's doing. And swinging around his big-ass sword. I don't know. I think it's, you got to kind of, I mean, I won't have to think about this, but I think it's important to, and fun to kind of think about where you're finding these abilities from. And so, obviously talk to your DM about maybe lore and whatnot.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about fire, because it's not just like getting a spell. You're somehow better at using your weapon, which makes a lot of real world sense. You start with your bow and you work in an archery class. You get more accurate over time. So with a fighter, I want to pose kind of the same question that we did for, I believe it was it paladin or monk? One of the two. Do they need a god? Does a fighter have to be this like trained martial person? Is there a way to do a non-standard fighter, do you think?
Yeah, I think you can just be a guy. I mean, you can start, I guess you could maybe lean into the monk one for this one, but you'd start as yours, like a guy that gets drunk and fights people in bars.
Drunken Fist. There's definitely subclass for that online.
But then you get a little better, and maybe you have to be drunk to get your to fight. And then that can be a whole arc where you're like, dude, you're drinking way too much. Let's try to wean you off that.
And then your DMT levels you by like 5, and it really sucks.
But I think, you know, there's definitely ways to do it without getting trained. You could just be really skilled. Maybe you're a lone guy in the forest and you picked up a weapon someday and just out of survival, you started using it and over time got better with it.
Okay. All right. What else for RP is important to know, though?
I think it's important to think what you do after fighting. It's been a long ass day. You've been maybe a mercenary. You've been killing goblins all day long, killing something after a long day of warring. What do you do? If anything, you don't have to do anything, but
you don't have to.
Do you go to the god's temple and like, oh, I gotta just wipe all this bloodshed off my hands? Do you go drinking? Do you just hang out with your buds? I don't know. There's lots of different things you can do. You don't have to do anything. I think that would also say something about your character, that you can just go out and kill a bunch of stuff and just be completely chill about it, which, you think about with D&D, that's how a lot of things are.
Yeah.
Everyone just kills crazily and then no one worries about it.
Chill. Nothing happens. Murder hurt
like, like the zombie shows where they're killing people left and right, and this person's never put a gun in their entire life and not even scarred.
Well, I think it's important to have realistic reactions to these crazy things people do when they start as a normal person and then they finally have to pick up the blade sometimes and stab a person.
Yes.
maybe the normal human psyche, yeah, would freak out about it. But I don't think it's unrealistic to have somebody that would be okay
and to be
it.
Fair, in D&D, if you're already level one, you've done something.
Yeah. Dungeon Crawl Classics does that sort of thing where you go through the meat grinder and you have a bunch of random NPCs that are going on this crazy adventure to fell this maybe one hobgoblin, and they all die. And the one who makes it out of it, that's your character, you know?
That's terrifying, but also fun.
But that's what it is. They are really cool. I would love to do that at some point.
The other thing that I think is important, which would, I'm not ready to segue into it yet. Maybe I should save this segue. But I think if you're picking a fighter, like you said, you can't make your spells flavorful unless you're a subclass. So what you can do is make your combat flavorful, make it interesting. I think about your fighting style. How are you trained? Maybe you weren't trained, but maybe you weren't trained. Would impact your fighting style. And you can really describe your sword attacks, your bow attacks. Maybe you're doing flavor stuff like you fight dirty, so you pick up dirt off the ground and toss it in some guy's face. Or maybe you're very honorable with your fighting, so you call some dudes out there and you all get prepared and then you go swing.
Yeah, you're standing behind a guy, but this is the last hit your DM tells you, and you're like, I'm honorable, I'm not going to kill somebody in the back, so I use my movement, go around, and I slash him in the front from like bottom right, top left, between the shoulder and the neck, and I slice him in two.
Jesus.
Like stuff like that. Yes. Or if you do get a little bit of spell stuff, one of my favorite things is casting like fire-based like melee stuff, scratching the weapon on the ground and getting the spell. So maybe I'm cheating a little bit.
It's supposed like, to be without spells. Is this guy in Game of Thrones? Is this something? So where he like puts his hand up next to the sword, and as his hand passes over, shoots up in flame. And that's
stuff
cool.
like that. And the quick things to think about is like position, sound, and weight. Are like just your five senses. How do these feel? And then write a couple of things out and then really wow your friends at D&D while they're like, this guy's doing like his 5-page dissertation on how he bisects this dude in twain when you could have just said that. But have fun with it. It's a cool time.
Yeah, I think you could easily pull, I kind of said at the beginning of the episode, but you can easily pull a lot of inspiration from not even just fantasy movies, but like history and movies. It's because, like I said, there's a lot of characters out there that would be a fighter class.
Yeah.
And you can watch that character and go, yeah, okay, I'm going to make my guy just like him. Make my guy just like this famous knight from back in the day.
Amazing like inspiration for every fighter or anybody that is a melee class in particular. Monster Hunter. Every character in that is theoretically a fighter.
Yes.
And they are masters with their weapon, over-exaggeratingly swinging things around. Whenever I use a glaive, it's often I'm fighting like I'm using the insect glaive. Large jab forward, spinning it around, saying my multi-hit is just not me swinging twice, but spinning the glaive and cutting through them. Really sick stuff like that. Look at Monster Hunter. It's really good inspiration for how you can use your two daggers, how you can use your bow. Shit like that.
And I think you can also, if you're feeling crazy, if you pick a weapon, you probably type in YouTube, I don't know, cool longsword attacks or something. Because there's guys I've seen on YouTube that will like recreate like Mortal Kombat, like karate moves. And it's pretty intense. So I'm sure someone out there has done it for weapons and fun stuff like that. Look at Geralt from The Witcher. He's got some cool sword
If you want
attacks.
Something more realistic than Monster Hunter, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, super fun.
Hell yeah.
I think it's also important to remember that you're not just a combat machine. There are a good handful of some of the fighter abilities that can, not a lot of them, but they can be taken outside of combat.
Okay.
And your proficiencies, you can easily use your proficiencies in fun and interesting ways that you can use for RP purposes. You'd be the big, tough, burly dude just like up, says like one word and everyone's in and scared and intimidated. So think about that stuff. I think it's easy to pigeonhole a fighter. It's just the fighter.
Yeah.
There's other things they can do.
Yeah, typically fighter doesn't use charisma as one of their stats, I would say, unless you're playing a samurai, which can lean into it a little bit. But for a fighter, it's trying to visualize, well, damn, I've got like 25 strength right now. And you're like, well, your charisma's like 8. You've rolled an 8 on your roll here, and it's a 6 because you're subtracting from it. This guy's not really convinced. You're like, do you even see my muscles? They're so strong. How does that work mechanically? Well, have you seen like there's some big, sweet, nice dudes in like Moana. There's a lot of like really big kind of individuals that are sweet at heart, but not so intimidating. So it does make sense. You don't have to try to cheese your DM that way. You can play a big, strong dude who's sweet at heart. Without being intimidated, I will say.
I think that's really cute. I like that. So I think this would actually maybe be a... No. Okay, before we do the segue, let me talk about the stuff in Xanathar's. Because I think it's important to always point out the Xanathar's stuff at the beginning of the class. They talk about a couple things you can think about. So Xanathar's mentions heraldic signs. And these are the ones you could use, like, if you're a medieval fighter that you would have, like, on a banner charging into a battle. And this is, you know, very opulent things. People would look and go, hell yeah, that's King Arthur the Great right there. I want to go fight with him. Mm-hmm. So you run through the battle and go hang out with him. I don't think every fighter needs a heraldic sign, but I think if you're making a fighter, a very typical medieval knight guy, that's something to think about. It could even have... you know, some big monster on it that you fought and killed, and increases your reputation, gets your word around. The other one is the instructor, which we did talk about a little bit. And I think it's important to, what I like here is you don't have to necessarily make it a human instructor. You could go meet like a dragon that's a brass dragon or something, and they teach you the dragon fighting ways, and that'd be pretty cool. Just something to think about.
Yeah.
And then the final one is a very important one that can help with your combat style. So if you don't literally know nothing about fighting, you've never played Monster Hunter, you've never watched Braveheart or something, you know nothing about sword fighting or whatever fighting you're going to be doing, the signature styles here are pretty nice because they'll say, like, you can have an elegant style, so you move with precise grace and total control. So you're like fighting with the water style or something. Then you got sinister. You scowl and sneer while fighting, and you enjoy mocking your foes as you defeat them. Just quick, easy ways to think, okay, that's how my character's going to fight, and that can help flavor your combat RP.
Okay. Well, moving into combat then.
Yes.
It's not hard to make a fighter that works in 5th edition. You could very much just go with the standards of what does the player's handbook say you're going to be in terms of stats. Of course, strength, though, that can be a misconception. Yeah. Maybe you're a fighter that uses a weapon that has either the finesse property that allows you to use dexterity.
That's why you definitely think about what weapon you want first.
Yes. I would say, so the first two things are your weapon, what are you going to use? Mm-hmm. And realistically, and shouting out to rpgbot.net, looking at what they say on fighters and whatnot, and some of my own opinions, it's hard to pick wrong. The only weapons that are not super efficient will be the heavy crossbow, great axe, or the whip. Those are ones that you kind of want to avoid here.
Okay.
I will say, if you're looking for pure stat-wise, do it if you want flavoring. You can figure out a way to make them work, but they just don't work well with some of the abilities and features you get.
Yeah, there aren't any really cool whips in D&D.
This is true. Could be. They're a work in progress. Sorry. So a few shout-outs things, of course, like longsword, warhammer, polearm, hand axe. You can also use a quarterstaff if you don't want to use a bladed weapon, or in terms of bow, like just the regular crossbow is best here. In terms of the other sorts of bows that you're going to use, again, the crossbow is kind of the best, but you're more than welcome to swap over.
I don't think I've ever seen someone use a crossbow in D&D besides monsters.
Well, I think
that's fun, I guess. You like being like a lost kind of guy pulling back.
Well, you think about like vampire slayer dudes. They've always got the guts the from Berserk. Maybe you've got a
the hand cross.
Your hand's cut off. He just shoots out and he goes shit like that. It's so cool, man. Crossbow expert is just insanely good. If you're going ranged, that's the way to go here. But stats, primarily going to want strength as your heaviest thing, whatever weapon you're using, and then dump the other one. You don't need dex. Don't worry about your initiative being super low. It can, if you want to start going faster, there's a feat that allows you to do that. I believe it's observant.
Alert.
Yeah. It buffs up your AC and your initiative. Don't worry about it. Let the other speedy people do that.
You can't be surprised either, I don't think.
Yeah. But what I will say is going with strength, get your constitution. Wow. Yeah,
I was thinking con or intelligence, depending if you're doing like Elder's Knight or something.
Yeah, Elder's Knight flips stuff around. That's definitely where you're going to need intelligence. But constitution, if you're not a ranged fighter, you're going to be right next to the monster, whacking it. And the only things that save you from death are your once per short rest, second wind, which lets you heal, and your action surge, which will give you
a high AC.
Yeah, and a high AC as well. Which,
which works. I guess what makes you think you could, it might be an easy misconception to go like, I'm going to bump up my dex then, but you just put on some heavy armor and call it a day. Keep moving on.
Exactly. You definitely can be a speedy fighter. If you're going with a finesse weapon, dump strength, then you don't need it at all. But to be able to wear certain armor, sometimes you need to have heavier stuff. And what's going to end up happening, full plate and studded leather, those are your choice. Studded leather is for dexterity.
Your party's going to hate you because you're going to be causing all the stealth checks to go poorly. But if the stealth check goes poorly, you can just kick their ass. It doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the fighter perspective.
You can't really go wrong with any sort of armor as long as it's like medium or heavy. You really want to go for that full plate eventually. For fighter, you're not picking a bunch of spells, right? You don't have all of these versatile bling blam blops that you can get from the spell book like a wizard does. You're just swinging. But what makes a fighter unique are its class features and abilities. There's even one that's the battle master that gives you different ways to protect people, to harm more. If you've got a sword and board, you get a plus one.
Strategy kind of guy, tactician.
Yeah, exactly. So reactions are your friends. Bonus actions are your friends. You're not just going to swing.
I think makes you think that Battlemaster would be a really good archetype for if you don't want to make the typical stupid like guy that walks in and just like, I don't really know anything. I'm going to punch and fight. Because the Battlemaster is the tactician, strategizing guy that knows the lay of the land, knows how to call the shots. So that's a really easy way to break that mold.
That's a lot of fun there. And if you're really wanting to do kind of a... Think of that build in Dark Souls. You have two great swords and great shields, and you're just bumping people. There's ways for you to build entirely around being able to react and just hit somebody with a shield. If somebody gets hit next to you, you immediately just use your reaction to reduce or raise the AC. There's a lot of cool things. And what I want to talk even before I get to like subclasses and whatnot is fighter is often multiclassed. I think that plays into why it's so highly popular, because you get Action Surge, which allows you to have another action. And you have Second Wind, which gives you instant healing as a bonus action, which is really useful. And on a short rest. I believe Action Surge is long rest. But
What level do you get those at? Do you know? Top of your head?
Action Surge is like second or third.
Okay, and pretty early.
Short Wind, I think, or Second Wind is like
away. Do you think Fighter is a better class to be your lower multi-class, or if you're going Fighter and then pick up some other ones?
That's what depends. Fighter is amazing on its own, unlike Warlock, where oftentimes going through the whole thing isn't worth it. You either are using it as the full class or you're dipping into it realistically.
Okay.
If you want to use this as your majority multi-class, the three that I'll recommend are Rogue, Wizard, and Warlock. Warlock's always good to jump into for anything, but if you're doing like Purple Dragon Knight or Purple Dragon Knight and Hexblade go well together, Eldritch Knight goes well with Wizard.
Yeah, so it's interesting you mentioned those. So I didn't even think about the flip side of fighter being your lower class. I was just making my list of fighters your main one, you're deciding to dip into something else. My top five, I'm gonna see your agreement. Yeah. The fifth one I put cleric. Could be kind of interesting. You get some nice cantrips quick early on.
Yeah.
Warlock was my number four.
Really?
Yeah, because I was thinking you can get Eldritch Blast pretty quick. So if you're not going range, that's a good range option. You get some small, spells here and there. Ranger, I put number three, mainly because I don't think Ranger is a great class on its own, but I think if you pair it with a fighter, then you can get the favorite terrain and some of the extra abilities that the Ranger does get with the strength of what the fighter gets, and you can make an actual Ranger class.
If you want that, for sure. But I'll pause it for both Rogue and Ranger is... A lot of what you get out of those two are expertise and skills and abilities.
Yes, Rogue is my number two.
But you can also just take the skill expert feat if that's all you want.
That's fair.
And then just stick with fighter the whole way.
So number one, you didn't even mention my number one. So I'm curious your thoughts on this. My number one is Barbarian.
Nope.
Why do you think no?
Rage sucks.
No, I disagree. I think Rage would be huge for a fighter. Because you're up there right in the forefront. You're taking less damage. You're going to town on some dudes.
So it depends on how many. It's very much like the Warlock. It's going to depend on how many encounters you have per day. You're going to get like two to three rages per day.
Yes.
And if you're really anchored on that, when those are done, if you become the non-classless class where you don't have anything else that you've got, you're tapped out, that's what I'd say. It feels so right. Ranger or Barbarian Fighter feels right.
It does feel right.
Yes. I guess like multi-classing is really if you're wanting to do anything more than just be really good at melee combat,
right.
That's where my multi-classing comes. Like if you you want to be better at casting spells, Warlock and Wizard, a Wizard particularly for Eldritch Knight and Warlock for Purple Knight.
Yeah. So I'd say you'd have to, I think that's probably archetype specific then. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause if you're, I don't know, Battlemaster and you decide you want to dip into Wizard, I feel like that'd be tough.
Mm-hmm.
Cause just like we have a player in our party that, in our home game, that was a different subclass for Rogue for like the entire campaign and then switched to Arcane Trickster, and they're not built for that. So their DC is super low.
It's like 13 at 12th level. So I'd imagine
if a fighter did, it'd probably be the same way.
Yeah. For all these, it's like two levels. And then for Rogue, it's so that you can get the Cunning Action, which is like 1 through 3 to get those levels, which is what I'm considering doing in my game.
Yeah.
But if you're just really wanting multi-class for the sake of it, reel it back a bit, because when you look at the fighter, it is the best at what it does, fighting. And if you really just want to be amazing at just that, hitting people with a weapon and using your Battlemaster feats or anything else, and you're not doing any of the spellcasting fighters, stick with it. Don't need multi-class. You don't have to do it. There's nothing that will just demolish and make everything amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the interesting thing to me about the subclasses for the fighters, some, I would say, are some of the strongest at what they do, like you said, in the game. And then we have some subclasses that are some of the weakest at what they do in the game. So the fighter, I think, is versatile in many ways, where it's either really good or really bad.
This is very true. Like, Echo Knight, I think, is hands down the best.
Yes, which, I would say it's one of my favorites as well.
The perfect form of Echo Knight, I think, is multi-class with Warlock, I will say. Hexblade Warlock.
It uses, I think, why I like it so much is A, it's cool and very powerful, but it uses bonus actions very well, while I think that's a completely underutilized section of D&D, is bonus bonus actions. Just, I mean, because Pathfinder fixes that by just having action economy with like three actions and stuff like that. So not having a bonus action or having a bonus action ability, I think it's really exciting.
Yes. Do you want to jump into like our favorite subclasses?
Yes, I have a list here, yeah.
Okay, I want you to go first. I have mine, but I'm curious to see what you say. Because
like just go down my list?
You can just say what you like.
Sure.
If you've got a particular number.
My top one, actually it's not top. This is in alphabetical order. Completely not my favorites in order. Top one would be Battle Masters in there.
Okay, I'm glad you didn't say Arcane Archer.
No, not including Arcane Archer. It's very versatile, I would say, for Battle Master. Like I said, I like the idea of breaking the mold of it being a very cool tactician. Whenever I read fantasy books, I like the guy that's like strategizing and figuring.
This is your Magnus Burnsides from the Adventure Zone. He played a Battle Master.
Nice.
Yeah.
And he gives you lots of options in and out of combat, which I enjoy. Second one I have on here is the Cavalier. My issue with the Cavalier is it does put an emphasis on mounted combat, and mounted combat in D&D is not very good. I think there are third-party options that make mounted combat better, so maybe pair it with that. But I think what it does outside of that is still very strong and very powerful. It's much more of a tanky dude. It's like I would consider the Paladin version.
Yeah, if you're wanting to be a kind of a protection fighter outside of Battlemaster, which you could take a feat to get some Battlemaster maneuvers and bolster that, but it's a really great one for that.
Very defensive base. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Third one, Echo Knight. I put that one in.
It's just
course.
Too good.
Very cool. Very powerful. Then I have Eldritch Knight because it's the wizard fighter before Bladesinger came out. But it's not as strong offensively as Bladesinger or Hexblade Warlock. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I think it has better survivability than either of those.
This is which class?
Eldritch Knight.
Yeah.
I think it has better survivability just because of what fighter gets as a base class on
its
own.
And that's smiting. Oof.
Yeah. It's not as strong offensively, but it does what it does in the other ways, I think, better.
Yeah.
Then my last one that I have on here. So I did like a top one, two, three, four, five, top five. The last one I put on here is Samurai. I think it's the most powerful offensive class, at least in the fighter section.
Yeah. It's your Genji. I mean, it's got the katana. It doesn't, technically. You use whatever you want.
I would expect people to use two-handed weapons with a samurai, but I guess you don't need to.
Well, people have a lot of misconceptions about katana being like light one-handed weapon, but if you look, samurai often wielding with two hands almost always. It's the size of the hilt, not the blade. So mine are very much in line with yours. I do love samurai. I'm going to reserve what I feel about it until I use it.
True. It's tough to. This is just me looking at it. I've never played any of these classes.
Echo Knight is my top. Like, if I'm putting them in order, it's Echo Knight.
You've played an Echo Knight, right?
Extensively.
Yeah.
And it is the amount of utility you get out of being able to throw your Echo 30 feet away. It like trivializes movement based puzzles. You can get out of dodge easily. It makes fighter it removes you from being right next to the thing you're hitting.
Yeah, I think it's cool because it makes you think about combat differently, because you're
way differently.
Two places really at once, and that's very freeing.
It's like, I don't want to get hit. My Echo's over there. Granted, if your Echo gets hit, it's gone at all. Like, your DM doesn't even need to say how much damage it is. It's if it gets hit, it has one HP. Use bonus action to get it back. But the cool thing is, I want to be away and hit with my Echo. You can do that with no resources. You just are able to attack whenever. But if you want to put people in the blender, meat grinder, I should say, you both stand there and then you use your relentless. What was it? Relentless something. It's somewhere. Unleash Incarnation is what it is. Up to five times per day.
That's such a cool name.
You get to just whack with both you and your Echo. So you've got, I'm gushing on it real quick. If you want to play fighter, Echo fighter, this is one of the coolest. You sit, you whack, your Echo whacks. Use your extra attack, you whack. Your Echo attacks, use your action search, you whack. Your Echo attacks, and then you whack again, but Echo can't because you've already used five at that point, but... You're literally just like destroying people.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
It's like if Mirror Image could fight.
Yes, exactly. And then if you're a Hexblade Warlock, it's Hex, and you're just racking up those things. Outside of that, I don't like Cavalier much because of how focused it is on the amount of combat, and it's like the amount of times I feel like I could not use a horse or be mounted on something.
If they had included that, they would have had better rules for horse mounted combat.
Oh, Jesus.
Give me a little tap there.
I do like Battlemaster, but I feel there's very few realistic options for which ones of them are useful.
And I think it's a lot of like, this is the one you definitely pick here. Yeah.
And I'll rattle those. Like if you're playing Battlemaster, Relentless, I'm just saying the names here, Relentless in terms of what you're getting, is a really great ability that you grow up with. That's your 15th level. So
you grow up
to 15th level, get that at least. But Grappling Strike, Menacing Attack, Precision Attack, Riposte and Trip Attack. I do also really like Rally and the Toss ones, but some people aren't very excited about them. If you want to be a tank, there's one called Goading Attack, which
I like Goading Attack.
Is really, really, really cool as well.
There's another, I think Cavalier also has one that's like a little taunt thing.
I want more of that in D&D.
I like taunts.
Like, I feel like they could really diversify combat there. And if your DM's already got the really strong, you know, what's that book about monsters not being idiots and they know what they do?
Oh, the monsters know what they're doing.
Yeah. If your DM's like really great at that, like Ryan is, being able to forcibly pull them towards you instead of killing your enemy that's downed because they're hungry is something that would help.
I guess you could, in theory, RP it, but then the creatures that don't understand you and this stuff, then it just makes me think of MMOs where the tanks are like...
Goad or enmity, I think it is, in Final Fantasy 14. Such a weird... If you look up the definition of that word, it's like, oh, okay, that works perfectly. Now I know. But those are my favorite subclasses, I would say.
Just I wish Runite was better. Runite I think it's cool. It's very cool, but it's just...
Play Artificer.
Just doesn't get... Yeah, I think it's... I'd rather play an Artificer. Yeah, it doesn't do exactly what I would want a fighter to do.
Yeah. God, for me, that's me. I wish Arcane Archer was better.
Oh, yeah. Definitely wish Arcane... I'm an Archer guy through and through. I'd love Archer. I used to use a bow and arrow back in the day.
Oh, wow.
I was very good at it, but I was all right with it. I mean, I'm not going to need to do my own more. Okay. But I love archery, and I wish D&D had archery better.
Maybe we can try working on that with my character, because I will be using a bow.
Yeah. Maybe we can look for some third-party stuff, maybe. Because
I don't think interesting WotC arrows. Well. That will make it more fun, like different arrow types, a la Link from The Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, because I'd say for the most part, I mean, depending on your party and your players, I don't think... keeping track of resources is not very fun, but I think if you're keeping track of specific arrows, that can
be like spell slots.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Like, I'm going to shoot off my explosive arrow, and you get two left.
Yeah. What I'm thinking for mine, since I'm doing very likely a rogue, though it's swashbuckler, so we need to rework that, swashbuckler and samurai, maybe the people in my village, like some were shinobi, and I trained both under the samurai and the shinobi, just a little bit. Though fighter, another incredibly important thing based off what weapon you're using are feats. No other class can use feats to change up what they do as much as fighter can, I feel. And the biggest ones you're looking at, and it's fairly self-explanatory based off of the title, and I'm going to list off a few here, are going to be crossbow expert. Nice. Wonder which one you're going to use with that. If you're using ranged weapon and you want to be min-maxed crossbow expert, go with it. Defensive duelist, if you're not being a battle master that uses the parry thing, great weapon master and heavy armor master. Just if it has master in it, it's going to be amazing. Bright weapon allows you to say, fuck it, I already have like a plus 11 to what I hit with.
Master's huge, dude.
Martial adept is amazing. Warcaster, if you're an Eldritch Knight who has a lot of constitution-based stuff, this is going to allow you to have advantage on your constitution saves. Polearm master with sentinel, if you're the uninitiated on those two, and I only have half of the combo, this allows you to... use your opportunity attacks when they enter your range as well with Polearm Master. Also with Sentinel and those two connected, you're able to use your reaction. If somebody takes a hit within your range, I believe, you're able to react and hit a person. Also, Sentinel stops somebody in their tracks if you hit them with an opportunity attack.
And so you have that reach range. They can't,
they can't enter
5 feet. They can't get any closer.
Or they can't leave.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious because they get in, and if they try to leave, you poke them, they can't do anything. Though the downside is, of course, they can move within your range around and kind of bonk on people within your range without provoking opportunity attacks. If you're wanting to do a protection-based fighter, there's some stuff that's out of your control in that situation. So taking some of those feats that allow you to react and hit somebody that is if somebody hits your ally, you being able to hit the target as a reaction is really powerful if you want to be a protection fighter. The other few are sharpshooter. if you're doing range stuff, skill expert, if you want to not multi-class into rogue, and Battlecaster, I believe. I don't remember what that one does. Battlecaster is really good, just off the top of my head. So those are the few that I would take a look at. Everything else, just for flavor, if you want them, but those are the feats that I'll kind of outline here. And realistically, talking about fighter, I mean, you know what it is. You've got the player's handbook. You see those abilities. They're really strong. They're really cool. Being able to attack multiple times, being able to heal yourself, get a second action. Mm-hmm. It's all really powerful, all wrapped up into a deceptively boring class that I will not say is boring, as long as you're not just playing the base thing and you're giving credence to the RP and the flavor that you can.
Yeah, yeah. As I always recommend with my caster players, always flavor your abilities and do the hand motions if you want to. Same with the fighter. Yeah. Describe how you're fighting, how you're swinging that sword around or pulling out those arrows. Make it fun to listen to, not just I'm bonking this, I'm hitting that.
Yeah. One of my favorites with using a pole arm is, specifically a pole arm master, it lets you hit with the blunt side of your weapon. If there is one, we can work around with it. But it's like, okay, you're slashing, doing two hits with the bladed portion. You spin it around like a monk, and you turn it into almost a quarterstaff, and you bop them on top of the head. It's so much fun, I will say that. There's not a lot of wrong ways to build a fighter. That's why so many people play it, I think. It's the least scary. For me, I'm afraid of not having spells.
Yeah, that's what you've always had. You've always had at least something.
Always something. Spellcast. I'm challenging myself within the Dungeon Chronicles.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm excited to see what you guys can pull. I didn't realize the fighter, 20th level, gets a third extra attack. That's a lot of attacks with a fighter.
I mean, at that point, it's like, you got to. What's the most pure way to scale them up with everybody?
Getting it all over again?
Yeah. When I'm playing in your game and in Kostas' game, it's kind of like a campaign diaries little thing for you. It gets a little overwhelming having like 5 to 6 attacks with my Echo Fighter. It's like, do I roll all of the dice to hit first and then just calculate how many of them work? It's like, well, maybe not, because right. It might die halfway through it, and then you just roll all those extra. Yeah, it's like, else, yeah, I don't know what's going on. So that's why I like D&D Beyond. It helps out. So getting better at managing dice with multi attacks is something I would recommend you practice. And that's kind of like my last tidbit here.
Yeah, that's a fighter.
He's a fighter.
I'd recommend if you've been on the fence. Like we've said this before, I'm pretty sure that when I first picked up D&D and opened the player's handbook, like, hell no, I just picked up and went right by the fighter as fast as possible. And
it seems boring.
Yeah, it seems boring, but the more you delve into it, the more interesting and complex it gets.
The ironic thing about you going past the fighter is you probably went to the ranger first. You're like, well, this sucks. Yeah, go back to the fighter because it's your ranger. That's the biggest misconception. If you want to play a ranger, pick fighter. There you go.
I would agree with this.
Well, ranged arch-based character. If you want to play a ranger and scout things out, that's still very much what you're going with. But do you have anything else for the fighter?
No, that's it, man.
Literally the second I finish up talking about fighter, I'm looking at Warlock Invocations because I want to show you the thing I found the other day.
Oh, yeah, let me see it.
Well,
speaking of Warlock, though, we are probably next week doing a Warlock episode like this, because we had other stuff planned with Multiverse and coming out, and that completely changed. So
yes, because it will not be coming out. So no. Reason we're doing Warlock is, and I'll probably go ahead and say it right now, I mean, you guys have been on, some of you have, my Twitch, twitch.tv/NESUGIRU. I became a VTuber.
What?
So there's a lot of weird idol culture around it.
You've been staying around for a long time. We've been talking about VTubers. God, I remember when you first brought it up, like
year and 2018, 2019. Yeah. It was like mid-COVID. Everybody kind of got into it at the same point. I've always wanted to. I used to stream just with my face. This makes it a lot more fun, energetic. I met some amazing people. I played like a 12-hour stream of Pokemon Arceus the other night. It was actually insane. It's currently sitting on my TV waiting for me to get back into it after I edit this and send it to Ryan. But yeah, jump over there if you want to hang out. We'll probably live stream that on my channel just to bridge the gap and say, hey, you know, new people of fans of Nisugiru, I have a D&D podcast. People keep coming in like, I love D&D. I'm like, oh, you got to go check out my D&D Discord, which we do have down in the description in the link tree. You know what else is, I don't think, in the link
lots
tree?
Lots of stuff.
We do have our social media stuff first. That's at Dungeon Crawl, Dungeon Crawl Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Then our email is thedungeoncrawlpod@gmail.com. We do also have a way to support us in there. If you have some little pocket change, that's our Patreon. We have a couple of supporters that have come in out through the years. We always, a few months that we've had it. Anyways, if you've been on our Patreon before, thank you very much. Names going across the screen. That's about it for me.
That's it for you?
Yeah.
So I was thinking.
Yeah.
Let me check here. Yeah. So I was thinking, Tom's at the gym earlier, right?
Who?
Was getting me.
What? Oh, you were at the gym. I thought you said, I was talking to Jim. Like, who the fuck is Jim, dude?
Talking to Jim.
Talking to somebody else?
I was at the gym with my partner, and we were getting swole, getting ripped, you know. And she didn't bring her headphones, so I gave her the other side of my wireless headphones.
That's cute. Couldn't be too far away, though.
Right. It's not a big gym. And so we're jamming out together. But the whole time I was in there, I was just envisioning, like, this is like a fighter montage, you know, in here getting
pumping on air and getting stronger.
Over to the other machine.
Man, I want to be able to wear that plate armor. I'm not strong enough yet.
Ugh. Exactly. You got to get your AC. Yeah. You got to get your strength up. But I saw this really, really intimidating big dude walking, like the size of a rock kind of big dude.
Like, actually, did you?
Yeah. The gigantic looking son of a.
Okay.
And, you know, a little intimidating. I'm like, I'm just getting started, dude. Come on, you know. But he came in and he walked over again in the space, he walked past me, and he, you know, kind of, it's one of those things where you can't walk past the guy. He has to like go like this.
Yeah.
He's so big. So he starts lifting, and I noticed something about him, that he's wearing a very particular shirt on him. And I'm looking at it, trying to get, I feel like I recognize this shirt, right? And so I'm trying to get a little bit of a point of view. And I'm like, we haven't even like released any merch, but he's wearing the Dungeon Crawl merch right there on him. And on the back, it said, rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, write a review. And I was too starstruck, you know, to walk up.
Starstruck by all the stars on the shirt.
No, I was too nervous.
Is he from the future or something?
I don't know. He might have made his own, might have been a big fan, made his own. I didn't want to tell him. I'm surprised he didn't recognize me, to be honest. But I got out of there fast afterwards.
We do technically have the ability now to make stickers.
Yeah.
Because Jamie has a sticker printer. So if we really wanted to make some silly merch.
Make some stick ones.
We could send them out. It'd be a lot of fun. If you're interested in that, let us know. Do rate us 5 stars. But as always, he's been Ryan.
He's been Braxton. We'll see you next week for Warlock.
Oh, God. I have to actually do like a ton of research right
now.
Yeah.
I
might sit down and say, Ryan, you're just going to have to let me pilot like all of this.
I'll just like sit back and let him take
RP
it over.
Stuff you fucking got, because you're the GM. You talk about how like from a GM's perspective, he's going to fuck
true.
With your Warlock, you know?
Elder stuff.
Oh, whoa. Shit, man. It's going to be fun.
Well, I think it's important. I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but important with Warlocks to not only remember that's not just Elder stuff. That there's lots of genie ones, a lot of other different
it's
types.
It's only Elder stuff just because that's what I like. There's like themes, genies.
It's my favorite type of stuff too.
Yeah,
so.
And they don't always have to be evil. We'll talk about it. It's a little spoiler for you guys. But we've been the Dungeon Crawl. Thanks for crawling with us. We'll see you guys next week on my Twitch as well, maybe. Deuces.
Deuces.
Kakebunshin no Jutsu.
Whoa.